We have women dressing up as small boys, a guy trying to kill children, and fairies. Broadway Breakdown is back with Peter Pan, so don't go away.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Broadway Breakdown.
I love this song. It's cute. It's so cute.
I think when I was a kid, it was like my favorite. Because obvious reasons.
Yeah, because when you're a kid, it's a blast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Broadway Breakdown. We are sorry that we had to take a little bit of a break. There was some stuff going on. Schedules conflicted, but we're back. We're talking Peter Pan today, which was one of my favorite musicals growing up. I loved it so much.
Mine too. You're not going to get any Peter Pan hate today.
No, not today. I am your host, Brianna Phipps. You can reach me at bphipps14 on Twitter and Instagram, and I am joined by the lovely Jackie B.
123 Jackie B on all platforms.
So let's get right into it.
It's funny when you said with grown men trying to kill people, and I was like, yeah, because when I read the play, the musical tones it down. It's still there where, like, Captain Hook's like, then I'll murder these children by baking a cake, and I'll murder these children. You know,
there's multiple ways he's trying to murder
and
them.
It's even more played up. Like, people actually die.
It's not just Peter.
Yeah.
It's people, like, all of the boys.
People actually die in the original play. Not the boys, but the Tiger Lily's Native American tribe. There are members who die in the actual play, and the same thing with the pirates. And I was like, this is rather dark.
Yeah. I mean, he was writing it kind of based off of, like, that childhood pirates versus Indians type of, like, thing that every kid played. And I mean, in those playings, like, we all lived because it was a play, like, play pretend. But
I also think too, you know, like, when you talk about the modern era, you have with the advancement of psychology and things like that, you're like, maybe we shouldn't have people getting murdered on stage for a child's play, you know.
I mean, that's thankfully they don't have that. Or if people do die in the musical, like, you're not really noticing it. I never noticed it.
No, they don't die in the musical. They do. What I have here, so you can see it, it's a 1982 version compiled by two members of the Royal Shakespeare Company at the time. And when the play first came to life in 1904, it wasn't, you know, they just had their scripts, but it wasn't published until, like, I think 1928. And so you're talking about this huge time span before it's published.
Plus, wasn't he kind of workshopping it as a play while he was writing it?
Oh, yeah. He made so many. He kept revising and took out things and put things back in. So basically, this 1982 text that I have is an amalgamation of all kinds of different versions that he had. So they're cherry-picking what they think are
Since you have the original version, let's talk about some of those differences that are in that original version that we don't see in the musical, or that we see in the musical that aren't there.
One thing that stands out to me is the lagoon scene. So in the original play, also in... I saw this phenomenal version done by a British company in 2010, where they had you in a tent, and it was like a 360 projection in the tent to change the scenery. So that was really cool because it gave you kind of the technology that I think Jan Barry would have wanted to have.
Yeah, that he just couldn't have.
That he just couldn't have. So they started this touring company in Kensington Gardens, and then I saw it when it came to the US. But they had, in the version I saw and in the original play, there's the mermaids scene, which in the musical, at least, I can't remember from the revival, but from the original, the Mary Martin version that was the original, they have the Tiger Lily scene is in the forest, and they have that "Oh, What a Beautiful Lady" song. Yeah. And that scene happens in the Mermaid's Lagoon, and Peter, like, thinks he's going to die, and he says to die would be an awfully big adventure.
Yeah.
And then eventually he cobbles some stuff together and then...
Which I always, like, relate, because, like, I grew up with Hook.
Yeah.
So he says that line there, and, like, it obviously wasn't in the Disney movie or in the play.
Right.
So it was that's what I associate that line with, not with Peter Pan, but like with Hook.
Yeah, it's a great line, actually. It really is. It's like a great line, and it's not in the musical because it's a very dark line. But
they
want
to lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, but you're right. It's in Hook, which is a kind of a dark movie, even though I really love that movie.
I love that movie. It's great. I mean, it's lighthearted at the end.
It's lighthearted at the end, but...
But it is very dark.
It is very dark because it's more about, like, what happens... Well, it is about what happens to the boy who doesn't grow up when he grows up, and it's kind of depressing. He's like a old curmudgeon.
The one thing that I could find, because I haven't... I mean, I think my parents read me the original book when I was a kid, but
he wrote a book, too.
Remember it completely, and I didn't have time to reread it, but online, the only thing I could really find that was completely different from the play to the musical was that they added J.M. Barrie's additional ending, which he hadn't written when the play first premiered, which was Peter coming back.
Right, the spring cleaning thing, where he comes back and sees Jane, which
and
is
sees,
Mary's daughter.
Yeah, old Wendy. And
yeah, or Wendy's daughter, Mary's daughter. Wendy's daughter.
So that was... an odd detail, but it was something that J.M. Barrie did write.
Yeah.
He just hadn't written it in time for the original production.
Right.
Like you said, he was consistently changing things up.
I actually, and Hook references that as well, where he's married to, he's either married to Wendy's granddaughter or her daughter. I forget which one it is. Or Mary, Wendy. Why do I keep saying Mary? I don't know why I'm thinking that. My mom is named Wendy after Wendy and Peter Pan, so it's very strange for me to keep messing this up. But he's married because Wendy is like their grandmother or their great grandmother or something in Hook. So he is married to Wendy's daughter or granddaughter.
Yeah, he's married to Wendy's granddaughter because it's Jane and then Moira.
Ah, okay.
In Hook. I think in the original text, it's a different name, not Moira, but I'm not
sure. I love that because it's like it goes with the theme.
I think it would have been a little too weird for him to marry her daughter. Like, I think there had to be a little bit more separation.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, the fact that the play references, like, at least three people out, and then it just, in the end of this version, they say, like, this narrator says, and they keep coming back and back and back, but it mentions Wendy and Jane and Moira. Mm-hmm. So I like that homage that Hook did.
That Hook did.
And the other thing that Hook did that is not... usually it's not in the musical, and I don't think it's usually in most versions of the play, is they do the fake food thing where mm-hmm. they pretend to eat food.
Is that in the original play or not?
It's in the original play.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I just thought that was something Hook did, so I like that.
Yeah.
I like finding out these things and noticing that the people that were making this film really did their research and like went to the original, because that's fun for me.
It was really exciting for me because I was like, oh, that's where Hook got it.
Obviously, a noticeable different thing, too, between the original and the musical is the music.
Right.
Because there's music, and that's something.
Yes.
The music was written by Mark Moose Charlap and Carolyn Lee, but apparently bombed on Broadway. So they had to bring in Jules Stein and Betty Comden and Adolph Green to kind of, like, pump up the thing, and they added the songs like Neverland, Wendy, Oh My Mysterious Lady, Ugga Wug, Distant Melody, and Captain Hook's Waltz, and stuff with others, but those were the noticeable ones.
I think the reason I like the musical is for nostalgia purposes, because when you're looking back, I grew up watching, obviously, the Kathy Rigby version is amazing, but I grew up watching the
Mary Martin taped
one from the 1960s.
We had like a VHS thing that we taped off of NBC one year. I think they brought it back in 89, which is, I think, when my parents taped it. So it's also great to watch because you have all those great old commercials from 1989.
Right. Because in the what they did was they took the broadcast from the last broadcast they did on NBC from the 1960s, mm-hmm. and they would just rebroadcast it.
Well, they filmed a live one, but it was in black and white, and like I think the sound wasn't that great, and so then they refilmed it staged.
Yes,
which is the one that now we see.
Yes,
and they also like I think edited some stuff out of it to make way for commercials.
Right. Looking back on it, I realize that Wendy's voice is, like, as a singing voice, is not that appealing to me as an adult. As a kid, I loved it. I loved everybody, you know. But looking back as an adult,
it's like the same thing that you, like, love it as a kid, and then you grow up and you watch it, and you're like, Tiger Lily's white with blonde hair.
Right, right. Well, that, I mean, that is another thing that you just learn with knowing better about things, I suppose. But as far as, like, the singing voice and some of those, like, magical moments that you're like, oh, this is not so magical, it's that same experience that Wendy has when Peter comes mm-hmm. back to do the spring cleaning, and she's ever so much more than 20. You're like, oh, I'm too old to enjoy certain things. Like, in the 1960 version, Wendy's house is just, like, a cardboard piece of shit. And you're like, oh, God, why was I so enthralled by that? And how do they all fit in it like a clown car?
Because it was just fun. It was fun to watch them just, like, put it together on this stage.
And the guy who played Hook, she won a Tony, Mary Martin, obviously.
Cyril Richard.
Yes. Also won a Tony for playing Captain Hook. He's just phenomenal. He was
just like, he has that whole thing down pat, like that whole, just the way he talks. I can't even describe what it is, but it just made Captain Hook Captain Hook.
Right.
I do. Because he was still kind of like feminine.
Yes. Which is, I mean, to me, that's part of the reason why people love Johnny Depp and Pirates. Mm-hmm. It's like, pirates are these kind of rock stars.
Drag queen rock stars.
Yeah, they're like these ambiguously gendered, they're like the David Bowies of their time.
Yeah.
So I love that about him. And I love, you know what, I love having a woman play Peter Pan. This version that I saw in 2010, I keep saying this, is like, here's so you can see it.
It's weird because someone asked me who doesn't know musicals. They said, why does a woman play Peter? Like, why isn't it a little boy? And I think my answer, and I don't know if it's correct, would be that when it first premiered, they didn't hire children as much.
Yes. They didn't hire children.
And they couldn't hire a man to play it because his voice wouldn't work.
Exactly. So at the time, the parts were all played by adults because children weren't allowed to work past 9 p.m. So when you're at a play, it goes past 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. So they cast adults in all the roles, which apparently J.M. Barrie did not like. He wanted the parts to be actually played by children.
When you watch Finding Neverland, I mean, I don't know how accurate Finding Neverland is to his actual life, but you know, he had that. He himself was Peter Pan. Like, even though he's called Freddie Highmore's character Peter Pan, like, he really was Peter Pan.
Yes. He said in his dedication for the published version of Peter Pan that Peter Pan was, like, an amalgamation of the Llewellyn Davis boys. But it's understood that, like, him himself wanting to always, like, play with his imagination and whatnot, mm-hmm. that he...
Like, he was more of a kid at heart than
right.
anyone. So it makes sense that he would still want these parts played by children because that's right. what he identifies with and what he can visualize.
Right. But as a woman, I have to say, I always loved... I mean, the guy who played Peter Pan in the 2010 version I saw, like, they had more true-to-life casting. Michael wasn't as young. But, you know, I would say people in their, like, teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
I, as much as I thought this guy's doing a good job, I still love having a woman play Peter Pan because there are so few, I guess it's getting better today, but women rarely get to play the super cool roles. Mm-hmm. And Peter Pan is like the ultimate super cool role.
Right.
He's the hero. He gets to do all the cool things. Like, everybody follows him around. He has his own fairy. And to have a woman play that role juxtaposed against like a traditional, like the traditional mother character of mm-hmm. Wendy is so nice to me. And I just really love that as a woman, like seeing another woman get to play that part. So I always liked that J.M. Barrie didn't, but whatever. And then apparently the guys who wrote the commentary on this version about what they were adapting, they were like, yes, it's rather unsavory that, you know, you have Wendy and Peter when they're both women, they're kind of flirtatious with each other.
Yeah,
and
I mean, some, like, the musical kind of cuts out the flirtation a little more.
Right.
As well did the Disney film, but the original was very flirtatious.
Right, and I love that, actually. Like, that's how it's supposed to be. It's like, she wants this, I mean, it's in the text, she wants this relationship with him.
He's too young-minded to want that.
That's
the great thing about Peter, though, is he has, like, these three women that all want him, and he's just oblivious. It's just so like life.
Right, exactly. And so I kind of like that. I kind of like the gender fuck of having a woman play that role and get to take that position. Whereas, of course, these like stodgy old British guys like thought it was unsavory. Whatever.
And we were hoping that we could have host Dakota here, who's joined us before. He actually was in the touring cast of this play as Michael, opposite Kathy Rigby, which must have been an amazing thing.
Yes.
I would have loved to hear his stories, because I'm sure there was many, many stories. So hopefully maybe he can like give us some info later on about that. The one thing he did say, though, is that playing Michael is a hard thing to do because it's the first role that you can outgrow.
Yeah.
Because it's the when he got too tall, when he was getting taller than Kathy, like, they had to replace him.
Yeah, that's tough.
The other roles are, like, easier because they're older, so you accept right. them being tall.
Right.
But Michael's the baby.
Right. And Kathy Rigby doesn't, I don't know how tall she is,
she's
but she does
short.
Not appear to be very tall.
No. I mean, she was a gymnast.
Right.
No, most gymnasts are not very tall.
Which is one of the great things that Kathy Rigby brought to that role was, like, she was very acrobatic. So
yes.
you did believe that, like, she could go on these adventures
and
or he could be.
When I saw Peter Pan live at the Orpheum, I believe it was, in San Francisco, she was the one playing the role.
Oh, nice.
And so it was really cool to see all of these acrobatic tricks being put in. It also made me be like, oh my god, I know her age and she's doing all of this and singing at the same time. Like, what the hell?
Tinkerbell, the woman who did... In Disneyland, they have, like, a zip line.
Yeah.
And Tinkerbell, during the fireworks... She goes across the zip line. The original Tinkerbell was, like, a very old woman. Like, I want to say probably in her 60s, 70s. So, and it's because she was a gymnast.
Yeah.
And so, it's so impressive to me that you have these women who age isn't getting them down. I love it.
And it's like keeping them young, almost.
Yeah.
One, you're playing someone that's young. Plus, Kathy Rigby, in the version that's taped, I believe it's the version that's taped, the twins, I believe, are actually her daughters.
Oh, that's nice. I love that.
And Mary Martin's daughter played Wendy's maid in the 1954. So I like that there's this family aspect that keeps happening.
I love that.
Let's talk about some of these sets and costume designs and the aerobatics of all of this. Because you can't have a flying boy without him flying.
Right.
So we have to have this harness, which creates all these different... like hardships to go through because so many more things can go wrong.
Right.
But it is so cool being there and seeing like this person all of a sudden just like lift up into the air.
Even when you saw the 1960s version where you can still see the little like threads, they're better now at like making it a little less obvious. But there's still something really magical in that scene in the nursery when he's saying, like, think happy thoughts. Because we all expect Peter to fly. Not that you don't know the story and you don't expect the children to fly, but there's something so magical about that moment when Peter's like, think happy thoughts, and Michael...
Christmas?
Yeah, Michael says Christmas, and he flows right up into the air, and you're like, whoa! There's something just magical about that moment. Even when I was rewatching it
If you watch the Kathy Rigby version that's taped, I don't know if it's still touring, but if you see it when it does tour, they do now as well do, because she does the flying across the stage.
Right.
But she also then goes off stage, gets changed, and comes out with a different harness that she can fly out over the audience.
Nice.
Which makes it even more thing. Because I was in the loge,
mm-hmm.
Which is the front of the balcony, and she, like, flew up to us.
That is really cool.
Which is the first time I could tell how old she was, unfortunately. That was the one drawback of it. But it was so cool, because she goes and she, like, flings all this, like, pixie dust. Glitter.
That is really
everywhere.
Cool.
And it makes it, like, all the kids, like, you just see all these kids, like, just like, oh my god, like, they're so amazed, and it's, like, such a magical moment to, like, watch and to watch the other people watching.
That's a moment that you can't get while watching television,
no.
Which is something I love. I did not love the 2014, was it 2014? 2014.
Yeah, we're gonna get to it.
Oh my god.
We'll get into
what
it.
A mess.
But I love the fact that the sets, too, are pretty simple. Like, they're intricate drawn, but they're not, you know, you're in a forest, like, you can't, I wouldn't want them to, like, try to make too much busyness on there.
I think for the time, for the stage play, what I was reading in the stage directions is that you do have scenes thrown in here or there for elaborate set changes, so there's a there's a hint at the fact that the original sets for the time were like very elaborate and cumbersome. Mm-hmm. I think for the musical, and especially now that we have even more technology to be able to turn sets around instantly, the sets are beautiful and so like move, like they move easily and they're functional.
Yeah. I mean, I think my favorite set is the one where they're in Peter's like little lair, mm-hmm. and then there's the up above.
Yeah.
So you can see the people walking up above, like you actually are underground.
Right.
I think that was a really cool way that they did that.
That is really, it is like really cool. There's a lot of opportunities for, and just like in this version where I saw the projector on the tent, there's a lot of opportunities for technology to make this mm-hmm. even cooler. And I think that at the time, and this is from, again, from reading footnotes in the play, that J.M. Barrie felt like hampered by the technology of the time. Like he couldn't
do what he wanted
to do. Do all the things he imagined. Yeah.
Like your imagination's bigger than what you could feasibly do.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the themes. So obviously we have being young at heart.
Right.
And not wanting to grow up. That like now is called Peter Pan syndrome. It's gotten a name put after it.
Right, right.
But it is something. It's something that as a kid, it's unusual the way Peter Pan is, because usually as a kid all you want to do is grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what's portrayed with like Wendy.
Yes.
And then when you grow up, all you want to do is be a kid again.
Right, right.
So it's a different thing to have this, like, these people that are kids that decided already, I don't want to grow up. And I'm going to go into this land and I'm going to stay young forever and never have to deal with the hardships of life.
Well, it's, I think, again, somebody, I forgot who it was one of the early critics, British writer A.A. Gill said of Peter Pan, at the heart of the adventure, the swashbuckling is the saddest truth ever told, that we all grow up and that what we leave behind is more precious than what we gain. That is not actually what I was looking for. Oh, no, here. The one I was looking for is right under it. George Bernard Shaw. Ostensibly a holiday entertainment for children, but really a play for grown-up people. So, I mean,
because it's a time for us to, like, reflect on what we've lost.
It's exciting for children, but it's obvious that an adult wrote it being, like looking fondly back and wistfully back on the past. And, of course, you have the you have the clock as in the crocodile as a symbol of, time, like, time being short.
I was
short.
Really about to hook, but, like, time slowly ticking away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he's the oldest person there, like, and the crocodile so many, is after him.
Yeah, there's so many metaphors in the play that when you're watching as a kid, you don't.
Right. When you're watching it as a kid, it's just fantastical. And then when you're watching it as an adult, you're like, oh my God, this is depressing. And I do wish I was a child in Neverland.
Like when you're a kid, he's afraid of the crocodile because it ate his hand. As an adult, you're like, he's afraid of the crocodile because he's afraid of dying.
Right. Exactly.
And especially like in Hook, like I keep referencing back to it. I know it's not what we're talking about, but like when they take
off. No, stole it. Hey.
But now it's all I can see underneath the wig
is
Dustin Hoffman's like almost bald, like thinned out gray hair. And that's like every time I watch the musical or the films, like that's in my head. I'm like, that's what's underneath Hook's hat. He's really an old man who's like trying to pretend to be younger.
Yeah, exactly. I love Hook for getting across that point.
It also makes me hate the fact that Hook didn't do well.
I know. You're like, come on, give that guy a break.
It was so good. Then we have the important, I think it's
like, I would call Hook a cult classic, though, at this point.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then we also have, I wrote, the importance of the parental role in a child's life. Because it is Peter, like, they left the adults behind. They didn't want that. But then they're still trying to find a mother figure because they still need someone.
Right. And then the fact that Wendy eventually realizes, hey, we got to get back home. And she convinces the boys to come back with her. And she's like, my mother will be your mother, you know. Mm-hmm. There's that There's that moment where they bring all the boys back and only Peter left.
Stays.
And I think part of the reason why he had Peter stay is because his brother died at a young age, and he stayed that way forever because he was dead.
I think that might have been part of it. I think it's also like to show the stubbornness.
Yes,
Peter Pan is very stubborn.
Right. Right.
And because I feel like there has to be someone in Neverland.
Yeah.
There can't not be a child in Neverland.
Right.
And then I also wrote love, because there is a huge underlying of love. Not as much in the musical, like we said, with like the flirtation, but there's the love of parents. There's the love of youth. There's the love of the fight. Like, there's, you know, all these, like, childhood loves that are just so easy.
Yes. My
headphones keep coming
off. My headphones keep slipping down my face. The one that's most poignant to me is where how you have, like, Peter Pan as kind of this figure who doesn't realize that, like, Tinkerbell loves him and Tiger Lily loves him and Wendy loves him. What I also thought was interesting is they give lines to Tinkerbell. Like, he actually wrote lines for her. So the person who's playing Peter Pan understands, like, what Tinkerbell said, even though, like, what we hear is just like, ding, 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 you know.
That goes to the thing that he understands fairies. We don't understand them.
Right. Which I like, because you kind of get more, you're like, because you can imply your own dialogue when you're watching it, but it's really fun to read it because you're like, oh, that's exactly what she's saying. Oh, I really get this now.
Which is what I hate about all these new Tinkerbell movies on Disney where she talks. And I know it's supposed to be that it's like we're in the fairy world, so we're a fairy, but I don't want her to talk. Tinkerbell doesn't talk. She doesn't.
I agree with you, because I like, as much as I love Julia Roberts' Tinkerbell and Hook, who actually talks, I like the idea that Peter has somehow mastered this fairy language, mm-hmm. so only he understands what she's saying, and that she... I love how Wendy just thinks fairies are, like, wonderful and whimsical, and in fact, like, Tinkerbell's a very, like, complex person and is, like, jealous.
Well, I read that, like, in the original, it was written that Tinkerbell could only have one emotion at one time, or something like that.
Oh.
She can only feel one thing at one time.
I could see that, though. I could see that reading it. I could see that for sure.
And that's why her emotions come off so strong.
Yeah.
It's because she's only feeling that one thing at that
right.
time.
Right, right.
There's no, like, logic that's just... I'm angry, or I'm sad, or I'm focused, or whatever it is.
I also have to say, he wrote a description of Tinkerbell, which, again, they have alive in the version in the tent that I saw. They have alive Tinkerbell, like an actual woman playing her. She doesn't say anything, and she's covered in, like, Christmas lights. It was very interesting, and she's tied, like, she's flying, so she's, like, tied up to the ropes and whatnot and flying around, but it was a little disconcerting, because you're like, I'm not sure why you, like, put this person here, like, made them submit to these Christmas lights, but whatever. It was interesting, and she's very acrobatic. But he wrote a description for Tinkerbell, so Tinkerbell looks like, from his description, looks like the Disney Tinkerbell with the leaf and the little... shoes, the little elf shoes. And the blonde hair. Well, he didn't really say blonde hair, but he said, you know, she's very svelte with a leaf dress on. Which I thought was interesting, because Tinkerbell is always...
Portrayed as a light.
Even in this play. Like, she was portrayed as a light. Like, it was an idea that he got from the Llewellyn Davis kids.
I mean, yeah, and I think that you had to do something on, at least for stage presence, because... it is going to be weird to see a full-grown person playing a fairy that's flying around. Like, to have something be small and stuff, and to not have it look too cartoonish.
Yeah. But I love that just for the cast, he was like, here, I'll give you a description so you understand what you're looking at. I thought that was brilliant.
So let's get into some... we've already talked about the Mary Martin and Kathy Rigby ones. But let's get into some of these other films. Like, I'm not going to get into all of them, because there's been so many films.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. There's the Disney cartoon version.
But let's talk about the 2014 live action version with Christopher Walken and Allison Williams.
Christopher Walken, I feel bad, because I like Christopher Walken as an actor. And, like, he plays, like, he would play a good pirate. Him as Captain
Hook... the problem with Christopher Walken...
was not right to me.
Even though he is a good actor, is he's so recognizable.
Yeah. He has a very distinctive way of talking.
Look and talk.
Yeah.
So... when you're watching him, you're not buying that it's Hook. It's just Christopher Walken dressed in...
you're like, well, okay, we got some pirates, you know? And I'm just like, I don't understand why this is happening. And like, his singing was not that great.
Yeah, the singing was... I know people that loved the Peter Pan one. I couldn't love it, because it represented everything for me that... I did love, and it took it away. Like, Allison Williams, she didn't do a bad job necessarily, but for me, she didn't play the part with confidence. She seemed like nervous the entire time, and maybe she just was because it was live. But for me, Peter Pan is like that ultimate confident person.
Right.
And, you know, he sings a whole song about how much like he loves himself and how great he is and stuff. And I just didn't buy it from her.
This was one
and,
of
like,
the times.
And like her flying and her sword fighting was like, I'm flying.
Yeah.
Oh, please don't let anything happen.
This is one of those times, again, where... And we've talked about this here, where they do stunt casting for the live show, and they're like, she's on Girls. Watch her be now on live television flying across the air. And I'm like, you know, just cast a person who is a veteran Broadway actor who is comfortable flying and being on stage and doing stunts. Like,
because with her, like I said, like her voice wasn't even like that bad. Was it Mary Martin? No. Was it bad? No. But she just didn't portray Peter to me. She wasn't Peter.
It was so, like, it was just uncomfortable watching.
I mean,
watching
some of the other people were great in it.
I loved the woman who played Wendy. I thought she was excellent.
And I think the guy who played Smee, I loved.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, just overall, it was just a little underwhelming. And the sets, they just tried too much with the sets. Like, it was, I don't, like, so much, I don't know. Like, I just wanted something a little simpler. And, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I grew up with the Mary Martin one like you did. And I was just like, why can't we just do this? Why can't we just like put them on a stage and film them? Why do we have to have these like sets that we're switching out and around?
Yeah.
And
That didn't bother me so much as what's her bucket? Allison Williams as Peter Pan. It was so uncomfortable that I actually like was switching channels. So like the moment she got way too uncomfortable for me, I would be like, oh god, I gotta take a break, and then I would switch back in. So I can't honestly say that I've like watched the whole thing faithfully through, because it was that painful.
Yeah, I did watch it, and then there, and I was just at the end of it, I was like, I can't believe I watched.
Right, you're like, now I want like what, like with commercials,
I think I
3 hours of my life.
I think
life
I
back.
Went after I watched it, I went and watched the Kathy Rippey one online just so I could, like,
you're like, palate
be happy.
Cleanser. Palate cleanser.
And then let's talk about the Disney film. Let's get away from this subject of Allison Williams and Christopher
Walken. The cartoon,
Walken.
You mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Because they... Who did the version with Jason Isaacs as Hook? Was that
the one that...
It was a live-action version.
The guy that played Lucius Malfoy?
Yeah, Jason Isaacs.
That's him?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know the actor's name, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know who did that one. The one with
I couldn't tell
the one
that
with
was
me
a
and my friends
one?
Always called... It wasn't Disney. We called it the orgasmic kiss. Because when he kisses him, he, like, shoots into the air.
Yeah.
No, I don't... It wasn't Disney. I think Disney's only ever done their cartoon version.
That one was super dark. It was a little too dark for me. And I didn't like the kid who played Peter Pan.
I mean, I obviously have this love for the cartoon because I grew up with it.
Yeah, the cartoon, you know, the cartoon, obviously Disney's been banking on this cartoon for a long time because they've been making 800, like, Tinkerbell things afterwards, and now Tinkerbell has, like, an island full of fairy friends and whatnot.
It's funny that Tinkerbell is the iconic one from that entire film. Like, that's
right.
The one everyone takes away.
Right. Everyone's like, that angry, cute little fairy.
It's because she's wearing the skimpiest outfit.
That's
what the girls want
well,
to wear.
You know what? It is fun because in a cartoon, you were able to imagine Tinkerbell as, like, a fairy of that, like, of the appropriate size, you know, whatnot. Because you run into this thing where...
And she had all that attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was always like,
Yeah.
She's spunky.
And I love the drawings of it. I think the drawings were so beautiful.
It's like, just, like, a fun, lighthearted kid film. Like, yeah, they took out... some of the other, like, the darkness and the love and
right
all those kind of things, but I think you still got the point
yes.
of the entire thing, and even all the female characters, maybe that's why I love it too, is like the female characters are all, I mean, they're in a time period where they're supposed to like obey, and none of them are obeying.
Right I do like that. I the only thing that I wouldn't say don't like, but I wish Hook was a little bit more, like, drawn in less of a villain way and drawn in more of a kind of, like, fop debonair kind of way. Especially when you go to Disney and you have this, like, giant head on this tiny body when you have the people in the character mask of Hook. You're like, this is so disconcerting, and I feel like he should be like charming, but he's not. He's a styrofoam head, and it's very, very upsetting.
The one thing I was going to say about the 2014 one, which I forgot, that was also the only version that didn't have the dad and Hook being played by the same person.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Which I didn't like. I mean, there's a point that...
There's a point that they're making.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they just...
Bloop. Yeah, I don't like that either.
So I wanted to mention that really fast. But back to the cartoon. I love Smee in the cartoon.
Oh my gosh, how classic Smee is that, though? Because every time I think of Smee, now when you do different versions, like, no one says that Smee should be wearing, like, striped pants and have glasses and have, like, a little orange hat on or whatever. But that's how we picture him.
I just love how absent-minded he is, too.
Yes.
He's just, you know, talking and thinks he, like, cut off his head and is crying for it. Like, he's just, like, this dutiful servant to right. Captain Hook, even though Captain Hook's terrible to him.
Right.
He's like the Gaston LeFou thing at all. Like, it's right. the whole same thing. Disney likes to do that. But, I mean, this one was written for them, so they didn't have to worry about it. But it's just like that level of, like, I'm going to be loyal to you no matter how you treat me or what you do.
Right, right. I also love the crocodile in that one because you can be really animated with the crocodile. And, I mean, and you know, the version I saw had a very elaborate puppet, and you can have all sorts of things to represent the crocodile, yeah, but it's really exciting. Like, that crocodile is really
musical,
well animated.
At least in the Mary Martin musical, I'm trying to remember what the Kathy Ruby one looked like. The crocodile.
It was that guy crawling on the ground.
The crocodile was,
like,
the thing
like
that
this.
Took me out of it the most. I was like, are we scared of this?
But I love the Mary Martin version in the same way that I love the Donny Osmond Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, where you kind of realize that the staging is super cheesy and ridiculous, but there's something almost like cult classic-y whimsical about it. Like, I just love that some poor...
No, I mean, I still love it. It's just like, I just remember being a kid and I was like, I'm not afraid of that crocodile.
Yeah, that some poor actor is like crawling across the stage with his arms like sticking out. Yeah. I mean, I also love the people who play the different beasts. Like, you have like the birds and they're all like jaunty and exciting.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and have us pull up the video of the Tony Awards now. While we're getting that up, I'm going to go ahead and read off what was won what year, because this has been revived many times. So the original was 1955 for the musical. It won the Best Performance for Leading Actress for Mary Martin, Best Performance for a Featured Actor for Cyril Richard, and Best Stage Technician. And then in 1980, it was nominated for Best Revival and nominated for Best Leading Actress for Sandy Duncan, who's also a great Peter Pan. 1991, it was nominated for Best Revival and Best Leading Actress for Kathy Rigby, and then in 1999 for Best Revival. See, it's never won since the original.
This is what I mean, though, about having women play Peter Pan. You have women get nominated in these like leading roles that they might not get nominated in if they were not playing Peter Pan. It's
also just like how few people have played it.
Yeah.
So this is the Kathy Rigby one because it had the best visual quality and audio quality. And there is something that you get with Kathy Rigby, like we said before, because of her gymnast background, that you don't get with the other Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah. She does, like, tumbles for no reason sometimes. You're like, this is really phenomenal.
I love her, also her little wrist cuffs.
Yes. Part of me wonders if they serve some sort of like function because she's a gymnast, if like she needs them for something, you know, like as a wrist guard.
Maybe. I never thought about it like that. But when I did gymnastics, we did wear wrist guards.
That's what I thought about it when she did the tumble, because I was like, I wonder if this helps her.
It's like support.
Yeah.
I just think of, like, being the kids in this scene. All you like, just keep, like, saying random stuff in between her singing. I also just felt bad for the kids. Like, I never wanted to be any of the kids, because all they get to do is, like, sit there and move their feet in one position while they're in the air. She gets to have so much fun.
I know, but still, like, I would take one of the kid roles if it meant
I
could just fly.
No, I'd
want to
be Peter, because I would want to, like, go and, like, be, like, spinning around on a string. And you'll see, like, we'll see that in a second when they get to the sky part, but she just keeps whipping back and forth.
I would want to be, if I had to be any of the kids, I would probably want to be John, because he gets a top hat and slippers.
But Michael gets a teddy bear.
I agree. Michael does get a teddy bear.
I want a top hat.
See, top hats are cool.
I would just steal the teddy bear and the top hat.
That's the moment that makes me smile. When Michael's like, "Wee!" Fun fact, in the script, a lot of the stage directions are, Michael is in the corner doing something dumb with a teddy bear. And I'm kind of paraphrasing, but kind of not, because those are essentially what the stage directions are.
See, this right here coming up is why I would want to play Peter. It's like, okay, so they go up, and then she just is, like, zooming around.
Right.
Like, look how much fun that looks
right.
like.
And they're all in a static line.
They're just like, wee, and she's like, yeah, I'm going
to
go over here.
But I feel like someone has to hold Michael's hand because the actor is probably, like, 6 or 7, and...
No, I know.
Yeah.
But, like, look how much fun she's having.
I know. She's, like, Superwoman. Look at this.
She's just like, I'm over here now. I'm going to do this now. Woo! Yeah, you're still in the same spot. And she's just, like, yelling, yeah, as she goes by.
That is one of the fun parts in the Disney animated movie is when they fly over London.
Yeah, and you get that great stage view of like Big Ben and all that.
Also, it's a classic.
And this is what I was talking about when she flies out into the audience. She does this.
That is really cool.
Yeah, in the show, the end. When she does her bow.
So cool.
And you just don't expect it. Like, if you didn't know it was coming, you just don't expect it at all for her to come.
Right.
Like, if you're in the orchestra, like, above you. It's like the same thing like when I watched the Aladdin musical that's no longer there, unfortunately, at Disneyland. And Aladdin and Jasmine are flying on the carpet above you. You're just like, what?
That is really cool. I never saw that version at Disneyland.
Oh, it was so great. I was so sad when they got rid of it. I mean, I heard the Frozen one's good, too. I've never seen it, so I can't weigh in. We are running out of time, so let's get to Broadway news.
I just want to say, if you guys have never seen the musical Peter and the Starcatchers, which is a prequel to Peter Pan, I saw it a couple years ago, and where did I see it? Solvang, which is, like, near Santa Barbara. So random, but it's really, really wonderful. I enjoyed it immensely, and I know there's a book. I haven't read the book yet, but... If you guys ever get a chance to see that.
Check it out.
Yeah.
The only piece of Broadway news that I have for this week, and I think Jackie was the same one, is that Kevin Spacey is going to be hosting the Tony Awards this year, which I am actually really excited about. I love Kevin Spacey.
I'm excited about that, too. And when they were having that last minute, like, who's hosting the Tonys? We don't know. It's getting down to the wire. Kevin Spacey seemed like a good, like, pull it out of your butt last minute pick. I was like, yeah, if you're gonna pull an actor out of nowhere, it might as well be Kevin Spacey.
And Kevin Spacey has that great dry humor, which I love.
Yes.
So I think that'll play off really well. Plus, for anyone that's like, can he sing? He played Bobby Darin in this film. I think it's just called Bobby Darin or called Bobby. And he sang all of Bobby Darin's songs himself, so he can. So.
I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a great choice. And it's good to have it. Like, I feel like we've had so much of, you know, we've had Neil Patrick Harris, who's great, but we've had him so much. And then we had...
He was slowly becoming the Tonys. And we were like, we get it. Neil Patrick Harris is amazing.
It's fun to have someone, too, that you're just not associating with Broadway at all, even though he does do Broadway.
That's where he came from.
I know it is. But people don't think, like, they just think House of Cards. And,
right.
That other one that he was in before House of Cards, I can't think of. But, like, that's what people think of when they think Kevin Spacey. They don't necessarily think Broadway. So it's great to have someone come that's where he got his roots and come back to it and do this years later when people aren't even associating him with it anymore.
Right.
So it's going to be... I think it'll be fun, Tony Awards.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm super excited.
Anything else you want to add before we end the show, Jackie?
Jesus Christ Superstar is next week.
Yes.
I won't be here, but Brianna will be hosting it, and we'll have a lot of other guest hosts that are phenomenal.
That love the show
that
so
love
much.
The show.
So many people
James
are
Lott
so
Jr.
excited.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing that for the next 2 weeks. We were hoping to have it, like I said, close to Easter, but things happened. Yeah, and so you can find you where, Jackie?
123 Jackie B on all platforms and on the RuPaul's Drag Race after show in 2 hours.
And you guys can find me at BFIPS14 on Instagram and Twitter, BFIPS1214 on Snapchat, also at the Speechless After Show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. here on AfterBuzz TV. And make sure you guys follow us on Broadway Be Down on Twitter. We have a Facebook page, and also make sure you subscribe to Popcorn Talk and get all the news and updates. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.